This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, we've got four arrests and a voter fraud ring in North Texas. In the Capitol, there's a wolf pack on the prowl, and it's affecting the speaker's race there. And we'll hear about a case study in Central Texas on bad bond behavior. In this week's interview, I talked to State Senator Pete Flores, who shocked the political world by defeating the Democrats in South Texas. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan about how the left-wing media is experiencing some buyer's remorse over Beto O'Rourke. Welcome back, Patriots, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. Coming to you from the 1836 studios, I'm Tony McDonald. Follow me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. You can find us, the show and our publication, www.texasscorecard.com. For this week's top news, I'm going to go up to the Metroplex and talk with Aaron Anderson with our bureau up there. Big news this week, some voter fraud arrests resulting from a big investigation. Tell us about it.
Well, that's right, Tony. In what has been billed as the largest voter fraud investigation in Texas history in Tarrant County, which began back in 2016, we are finally seeing the first arrest in what the Attorney General's office called an organized voter fraud ring. And that's exactly what it is. Not just a few random people, but an organized effort to steal elections for specific candidates in the Fort Worth area.
So we're used to hearing about some of this kind of down in the Rio Grande Valley, the politiqueras, those kind of things. But here we've got four people being arrested for voter fraud. They're in a major metropolitan area of North Texas. What else do we know about this scheme? What were these folks doing?
Well, that's absolutely right, Tony. We do think of this as being a problem confined to maybe South Texas, but this investigation has kind of put that to the lie, this and the big mail ballot fraud investigation currently going on in Dallas County as well. What these four women and others have been up to is specifically harvesting mail ballots from elderly voters, those that are qualified to vote by mail, submitting often fraudulent mail ballot applications in their name, then going back and, quote, assisting them, basically filling out for these voters their ballots, or in some cases simply forging them outright, and then submitting these ballots for specific candidates and campaigns who are paying them to do so.
Yeah, so they're basically targeting elderly people and literally stealing their vote for the benefit of whoever is their paymaster. So let's talk a little bit about who benefited from this. There's some candidates who, some experts up there are saying these candidates won as a result of this scheme.
That's right. And just to back up a little bit, this was really uncovered by a group called Direct Action Texas, headed by Aaron Harris. His team did a lot of this research and then turned it over to the Attorney General's Election Fraud Unit for further investigation that finally led to some of these prosecutions. But what Harris's team uncovered is some local candidates, specifically Sal Espino, who was formerly on the Fort Worth City Council. He chose not to run for office again after these allegations were made public in 2016. State Representative Ramon Romero appears to have benefited from some excessive mail ballot harvesting in his election as well, and some other local races. So that's really the interesting question. We're seeing some prosecutions of the frontline operatives who are being paid. But the real question is, who is paying them, and are they going to be prosecuted as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen these four arrests, and so the question remains, will we actually get to holding the people who are really ultimately responsible for this, who are organizing these things, whether they'll be held liable? We'll have to have you back on. I know there's a lot more to be said about this, about who else is responsible and where these investigations are headed. So I appreciate your coverage of it, Aaron.
Absolutely, Tony, and there's definitely more to come.
Next, turning our focus to the Texas Capitol, we're going to talk with Brandon Waltons, Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. What's this we're hearing in the speaker's race down there about a wolf pack?
Yes, a bit of a surprise. A group of about 20 Republican state lawmakers in the Texas House, they call themselves the Wolf Pack, apparently.
Hey, we don't know the explanation for the name, no. But it is funny. But if it's serious, so what are they doing?
Yeah, so they actually, a bit of a surprise, released a name. They've apparently been working, a bit of a working group for a while, and they released the names of three lawmakers that they say that they could support as the caucus, the Republican caucus nominee for the next Speaker of the Texas House to replace Joe Strauss.
So these three guys are ostensibly part of this group, and they apparently this group wants one of these three guys to be the next Speaker of the House to replace Joe Strauss, who's leaving the legislature.
Right.
Tell us who the three guys are. Tell us a little bit about them.
Yes, and so none of the three candidates, by the way, that they announced or have actually filed or announced campaigns of their own, making this even more interesting. But you've got State Representative Morgan Meyer. He's out of Dallas. This is the person who actually heads up this working group that created this list.
He is the lead wolf of the Wolf Pack.
Right. Additionally, you've got Representative Dade Phelan out of East Texas, so Orange, Southeast Texas.
Kind of Beaumont area.
Yes. Yeah. And you've got Representative Dwayne Burns from Cleburne.
Okay. And so where are these guys at politically? What do we know about them?
Well, you know, none of them are that, all of them are scored about in the 60s on the fiscal responsibility index. So these are sort of middle of the road kind of Republicans.
Not the most liberal Republicans, also not particularly conservative.
Which makes sense. They're saying they're trying to create some sort of a bridge between the conservative Republicans and the more liberal establishment Republicans.
So if listeners have been listening to the show over the last few weeks, and if you haven't, go check out the podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Kerry Cheshire's been doing his commentary. He's given us a little rubric. How do we look at candidates for Speaker as voters? What do we think about these guys? So first question, are these guys trying to get elected through the Republican caucus, or are they doing this path where they're trying to work with the Democrats?
Well, it looks like yes. All signs point to yes on that, which is good. They are indeed trying to work through the caucus to try to find a unified Republican member, taking control away from Democrats who have previously had a bigger say in choosing the Speaker.
Now, other kind of rubrics of this, other criteria to look at, have any of these guys really ever stood up to leadership in their time in the legislature?
Well, you know, these are not the conservative fighters, right? And so we have not seen a lot out of these people. I think if you're looking at the three of them, Dwayne Burns has probably bucked leadership the most. Dade Phelan has the lowest fiscal responsibility index score, has voted with leadership more often.
Yeah. And then what about the record? Are these guys saying anything about what they want to do? Are they going to pass conservative reforms or not?
Well, that's up for folks and the grassroots to ask them. I mean, citizens need to be asking their lawmakers, need to be asking these folks, what are you going to do if you do indeed get the gavel? They haven't said a whole lot. We'll see if they say anything else.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you covering it, and I look forward to more news as these guys maybe actually declare or come out and run.
Yes, thank you.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with our Central Texas Bureau. Round Rock ISD has a bond package on the ballot this November, and a little bit of a case study in some of the problems we see with these bond packages around the state. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you're right, Tony. You know, you often hear the tagline that bonds are for the kids. I think this one could be described as for the parents' money.
Yeah.
but the history on this is last year, Round Rock ISD proposed an almost $600 million bond that was soundly defeated by voters because it had lots of problems in it. Inflated costs, a $16 million indoor pool. And so voters rejected it. But now, a year later, the district has come out with a very similar bond, same
going back
items
to
the
well
package.
Again, right?
Yep, and even worse inflated costs, up to $100 million. But this time, they've packaged it into one proposition, meaning it's forcing taxpayers into an all-or-nothing decision.
Yeah, so they don't give them an option of, oh, well, I want to build a school, but I don't want to build, you know, a bunch of pools.
Right.
So they're not giving them the option. How are taxpayers in the community responding?
There's an organized effort to oppose this bond and educate the public on what's really going on here. And they are facing a lot of pushback from the district. The district is really spending hard to try to sway voters into voting for this.
Yeah, let's talk about this. So the pro-bond people have put together a PAC, raised a bunch of money. They're kind of being a little open about the fact that, hey, this is about making money.
You're right. There's a pro-bond PAC that has raised at least $50,000 so far. 92% of that is coming from local contractors, construction, engineering businesses. And in fact, one of the local contractors put out an open letter on LinkedIn saying, appealing to the business community to support this. He's saying, look, some of y'all are directly vendors of Round Rock ISD and will benefit.
Now, so he's saying, hey, you'll profit from this. Give me some money to help pass this thing.
Exactly.
I saw something. This guy's now lashing out at the taxpayer groups and like threatening lawsuits, something like that.
Yet one of the citizen group Facebook pages reported his open letter in a post, and he jumped on there and commented at least 20 times, threatening pretty much everybody on there with lawsuits.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to come see you. I'm going to do something. I think that will probably end poorly for him as an attorney. That's my general perspective. Really interesting what's going on there. We see this around the state a lot where you have these bond packages and it's just, you know, abusive tactic after abusive tactic, one after the other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Appreciate your reporting on it, Jacob.
Absolutely.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week Texas's newest State Senator Pete Flores. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity to visit with y'all.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to have you on to talk about some of the history that you're making and some advice you might be able to give to candidates who are out there in some tough elections. As if listeners aren't aware, we've covered it a little bit on the show. You won a historic special election down in South and West Texas, defeating a former congressman there to pick up a seat for Republicans that basically nobody said you could win. You know, it was something that hadn't been won in a long time, in over a century, by Republicans. And you're now Texas's, I was kind of amazed to learn this, Texas's first Republican Hispanic state senator, which is a pretty interesting landmark. And so I think I'm excited about hearing the advice you might be able to give. But I wanted to focus in and get started. I was at your swearing-in the other day, and you made the comment there, hey, I'm here as a servant of the people. They're the boss. Tell us a little bit about that philosophy that you're bringing into office.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, that is the basis of our constitutional republic. Is that we're governed over the people, by the people, for the people, and it's with the premise that we're not ruled by kings or dukes or anything of that nature of the European model, that we're on the American model. And in an American model, in a constitutional republic, we the people are the king. And so those that go to represent you are there to serve as public servants and not to be served. And so that's the basic premise of that. I believe in that strongly. I've been a peace officer for 33 years, active serving 27, and it's about service is what that profession is about, and a number of others. And so that's what I'm bringing. That's the basis of that statement during my swearing in.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of exciting to see leaders who are elected who get that philosophy, who understand it, because that's at the core of understanding. Well, how are you going to handle legislation? What's the role of government? All of these things. I wanted to to talk a little bit about the campaign that you ran. So this was a special election, a huge. Tell listeners a little bit about this district. I mean, this is a huge swath of Texas that you were running at.
Thank you. This is Senate District 19 is a very large district, a very diverse district. It encompasses one third of the city of San Antonio and Bexar County, which in itself is an entity upon itself. Then there's 16 other counties running across the Eagle Pass, 400 miles up the Rio Grande to Alpine and Fort Stockton, and all the way to the New Mexico line at Pecos.
Wow.
back through the zone of the hill country in the back of San Antonio, and of course, big red Medina County.
Oh, yeah. As you're out there running, a lot of these areas, people look at it, they say, look, these are Democrat areas, San Antonio and others, you know, and they're really kind of 50-50 if you really look close, but they're treated, oh, these are really Democrat areas, and people kind of didn't really give you a chance when you first got into the race, and I want to just hear, like, why did you think you could win, and then what did you do in terms of campaigning in a district like this in a year where people are talking about a blue wave and Democrats picking up seats and all these things? What were you doing as a Republican candidate to totally upset the political establishment, the money establishment, and everything else, and win?
Well, first of all, in any endeavor, we have that old saying in Spanish, con Dios y con ganas todo es posible, which means with God and with the will, anything's possible. First, you got to believe, and we believe this was possible. And this district is historically, if you want to go into political talk, is historically been in presidential cycles, a 60-40 type of dynamic. I ran in 2016 against Carlos Ureste, and again against all odds and a little bit of money, but we still were able to get the 97,600 votes, about 43% of the vote.
Wow.
in the last cycle in 16. So we knew then that we were within 5 points. This district has always been 5 points of flipping. But to have this, whenever you have in any endeavor, but especially I believe so in politics, where you say, you know what, it's just empirically impossible. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And so you don't invest the time, money, and effort to do that extra 5 points. But the thing about it is that we Texans in Southwoods, they're in South Texas and West, but Texans in general, we're actually a very conservative population.
Sure.
And we all believe in three things: in God and family and country, and that's pretty much everyone. And so when you reach out, when you show up, when you take the time to go to the communities and say, this is what we stand for: God, family, and country. And well, so do we. Well, what are you? Well, I'm a Republican, and that's what we believe in. And you know what? So do they. But you offer a choice. You say you don't take that for granted. You don't. I was quoted as saying that. If Sam Houston would have listened to the statisticians, he wouldn't have whooped Santa Ana.
Yeah, that's right.
So sometimes you just got to get out amongst them, and so that's what we did, and we did that for 3 years, and we have a grassroots organization out there of folks that believe, as like we did, that this was possible, that are basically conservative in their beliefs, and that was in both sides. There's actually a lot of Democrat voters out there that are actually very conservative, but he had no choice.
Sure.
So we offered them choice. We showed them what we stood for. We showed up, FaceTime, if you will. FaceTime makes miracles.
Yeah.
And we took nobody for granted. And we just plainly we worked hard. And at the end of the day, this is another example of what happens when in any endeavor you work together, and the entire apparatus of our party worked together, no matter what position that you held in the spectrum. But the one thing we all agreed on was we can win this, and we did.
So there, I mean, I hear impressive things about, I mean, you had dozens upon dozens of volunteers and people working, you know, not just in one little population center, or not just focusing on San Antonio, but across the district, building out a real organization of people who were talking to their family and friends and neighbors.
Yes, isn't that the original American way? Isn't that the original Texas way, where we communicated with our friends and our families, and together when it created a big network and we made things happen, and it's. So we had, yes, our grassroots combined with the organizations of Governor Abbott and Governor Patrick, and help from Empower Texans and Texas Right to Life, and all across the spectrum of the Republican Party and people that believe like we do in God, family, and country. All of us working together is kind of like a fabric, if you will, that created this outcome. And this is the very same outcome that we can have across the board in the state, whether it's a local race to the national races. We just have to get out, talk to your family, talk to your friends, and get them to the polls, and work the neighborhoods and work the precincts, and then take the time and invest the treasure, and this is what will happen.
Now, a lot of people would say, look, you're running in a seat that is, look, it wasn't like some dark, deep blue district. This is a lot of good, you know, common rural Texas folks, but it's a seat that's been held by Democrats for, you know, a very long time. And they would say, look, if I going to run there, you're going to have to moderate. You're going to have to mimic the Democrats. You're going to have to take some liberal positions. But I didn't see any of that. I saw you out there, you know, championing property tax reform and the issues that you hear conservative candidates always talking about.
Well, yes, and the district was held by Democrats for 139 years.
Wow.
But nonetheless, that didn't deter us. And you're exactly right. Well, what we concentrated on were tickets or things that were kind of like the big issues that were important to everyone, and we were unapologetic in our conservative stand. They knew I made no apology for where we stood on the big issues, limited government, being conservative, pro-life, pro-Second Amendment. I mean, everything was just up front. But what we did talk about was we didn't get into the weeds. We didn't get into the fringes. We didn't get into the conversations that the national media wants us and the left wants to bring to the table. We talked about things that were important to us.
Sure.
To Texans, to the everyday Texans. And yes, we about had it with property with the way the property taxes are done in Texas, and we need it to be fair and equitable so that while we want to pay our fair share, we want to have a fair, it'd be a fair fight, if you will, but it's not. And one question I always ask the audience is, how'd you like your latest appraisal? You know, and I don't care who I was talking to or what community it was in or what social economic status they were in. We all feel the same thing. We're not too happy about that.
Republican, Democrat, Independent, they know that. They feel that pain of that tax
Everybody.
Bill, and they know it. Yeah,
and
that
we all
sense.
Want secure borders, and we all want secure communities, and we all feel very strongly about our God-given right to bear arms. You know, those are things not only American but truly Texan, and we want quality schools. We want parents to be the drivers of policy. You know, these are all things that speak to everyone, and those are the main issues that we campaigned on, and then those are the issues we intend to work on now that we have the seat.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to be a great contributor there in the Texas Senate, working with Lieutenant Governor Patrick and Governor Abbott and various colleagues there. And I think that's good advice. I mean, I think it's if it's the kind of message that wins in a, you know, kind of purplish district down in South and West Texas, surely this is a message that can resonate in a Republican district or, you know, Houston or Dallas or all over the state. Well, we're running out of time, but before I finish finish, I wanted to give you an opportunity. Tell folks who are listening, where can they get in touch with you? How do they get connect with you and your office now that you are a state senator?
Well, thank you. But if they wanted, if they're interested in our campaign and for the political side, they can go to PeteFlores2018.com and look at our website and our positions and have our contact information on there. Again, PeteFlores2018.com, or they can contact us on the government side as a serving state senator here at the Capitol. My chief of staff, his name is Harold Stone, and my phone number here is 512-463-0119.
Great. Well, thank you so much, sir, for joining us. Thank you for serving, stepping up, and really stunning the political world with this big victory.
Thank you. And a reminder to everyone, we have historic midterms. Show up, show up, show up.
Good advice. Thank you, sir, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S, .com.
The election hasn't happened yet, but the left-wing media is already experiencing some buyer's remorse over Beto O'Rourke. Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more in this week's commentary.
As his political fortunes appear destined to follow those of two decades worth of Texas Democrats before him, Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke is losing the affection of his fawning admirers, the national mainstream media. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. In past years, the national press would have just moved on from their hopes that the amazingly charismatic whoever it was simply wasn't going to be the one to usher in a new era of Democrat dominance Lone Star State. They told themselves they usually knew it wasn't true, but that they had hoped, really, really, really hoped. They hoped that Tony Sanchez could beat Rick Perry, that Bill White could do it, or maybe that Wendy Abortion Barbie Davis could trounce Abbott. Each time their infatuation got the better of them, they hoped, but they never quite let themselves fall as completely head over heels in love as they did this summer. This year, the lefty press fell madly in love with Beto O'Rourke. They had a rich, entitled, white liberal raised by politically connected liberal parents. I mean, remember this. This is a guy who successfully appropriated a nickname of the local Hispanic culture, which was a huge score in their collectivist mind. Here was a Democrat they loved. Beto is everything they love. His drunk driving record, well, that evoked the Kennedy legacy. His leering smirk reminded them of Clinton. That'd be Bill, obviously, not Hillary. His inability to speak coherently without a script, well, hey, that reminded them of Obama. He even got the endorsement of the creepy porn lawyer, Michael Avenatti, with whom they're having such a love affair these days. But then the real election polling numbers have begun to emerge. Politico, which is the daily devotional reading for the left, has emerged from their rapturous infatuation with O'Rourke. Furious, they let a buffoonish congressman from Nowheresville fool them. How, they wondered in print recently, could their elitist friends have all fallen so hard for this lightweight? Politico assigned special blame to the failing Texas Monthly, a far-left magazine that once catered to doctor's office waiting rooms and Californians thinking of immigrating east. Texas Monthly was bought a couple years ago by disgraced political hack Paul Hobby. His daddy was a Democrat bigwig back in the 1980s when Democrats actually held statewide offices in Texas. Paul has hoped for years to be taken as seriously as a political force as his daddy was, but he's increasingly seen as little more than a punchline. It would appear his magazine's fawning support of Beto isn't helping. In a fit of swooning adulation, Texas Monthly seriously wrote that, and I'm quoting here, "Even a loss in his Senate race might not diminish his political momentum," end quote. And the national media bought into that quackery because they hoped it would be true. The lefty press wants dearly for Texas to be Californized, but they keep looking for love in all the wrong places. After two decades of heartbreak, you'd think the national media would realize the Texas media knows less about Texans than even they do. But rest assured that in just 18 months, we will begin a hearing anew about the amazingly charismatic Democrat flavor of the month who will be the one in 2020 to turn Texas blue. They can't help themselves from falling in love. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Well, that's all I've got for you this week. Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.